Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Umicore Half Year Results 2010 conference call. I'm pleased to present Marc Grynberg, CEO, and Martin Verluijten, CFO. For the first part of this call, can I remind you that all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question and answer session. Mr. Verluijten, Mr. Grynberg, please begin.
Thank you, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the presentation of Umicore's results for the first half of 2010. We released our half-year figures earlier this morning, as you could notice, and you will have observed that the earnings recovery that actually started in mid-2009 has continued, and actually it has accelerated since we last talked. I will now comment on the highlights of the first half and the main factors behind the earnings development to help you fully appreciate the progress that we have made and the reasons that have led us to raise the full-year EBIT guidance. We will, as part of the presentation this morning, we'll also review cash flows and growth projects, and of course we'll talk about the dividend, as you read this morning that the board decided to declare an interim dividend, which somehow confirms our strong performance and underscores our positive views and outlook for the future. So let's now start with the revenue and earnings developments in the first half. Our revenues increased by 15% year-on-year, driven almost exclusively by the volume recovery in those businesses that were most affected by the market downturn end of 2008 and in 2009. The volume recovery that started to become visible mid-2009 in automotive and electronics and markets has actually gathered steam and was supplemented this year by a recovery that started a bit later in other industrial applications such as tooling, electroplating, or contact materials. Confirming also what I mentioned last year, prices have held up well across most businesses, through both the downturn and the upturn phases, and as I mentioned a minute ago, the revenue developments are mostly, if not exclusively, volume driven. As expected and shown on the graph on page 4, the EBIT has recovered faster than revenues have, and that's a reflection of our operating leverage and the cost savings that were achieved since the end of 2008. We also benefited from very favorable supply conditions in our precious metals recycling activities, a better supply mix actually, and higher metal prices. Not to forget the stronger US dollar or weaker euro, depending on which perspective you take, which helped us for a while earlier this year. I'm afraid that this effect was a bit short-lived, however. As a result, and as you can see on the graph on page 5, the earnings recovery, as a result of the earnings recovery and the tight capital management, despite, I would say, the increase in working capital requirements as a result of higher metal prices, the overall return on capital employed is now already back to the levels we reached prior to the downturn in the region of 20%. Return on capital employed. As I mentioned earlier, the recovery that started to take shape around mid-2009 did accelerate in the first part of this year. Our base scenario, you may recall that so far, was that we would be back to pre-crisis levels sometime in 2012, and the recovery that we observe in revenue and earnings today is somewhat ahead of this base scenario. I would say approximately 1 year ahead of that scenario that I described a while ago. Shorter term, considering the levels of demand that we expect in the coming months, I'm now confident that we will exceed quite substantially the previous EBIT guidance for the year, and we should end up somewhere in a range between 315 and 335 million euro as recurring EBIT for the full year. I would say also that the revised guidance reflects a continued strong performance in precious metal services based on the supply that is currently available in the plant for processing in the second half, and the fact that we have secured to a large extent the precious metals price component of our margins through year-end. The following slide shows our safety performance, slide number 7, which is somewhat behind the levels of last year. This being said, the programs that we implemented aiming at an accident-free workplace are being deployed with full force as we speak. Let's now review the status of our key growth programs, and I'm moving to page 9. Our growth programs are on track, and the R&D spend in the first part of the year was comparable to the level of last year. Capital expenditures, as you see on the graph at the bottom of the of page 9, were a bit lower, though, and that is due principally to the timing of certain of our large projects. It is reasonable to expect an uptick in the second half, I'm talking about the capital expenditures, leading to full-year CapEx in the region of basically what was spent on average in the past 2 years. More specifically, I would say the in lithium-ion battery materials, for instance, the preparatory work is ongoing for the expansion project in Korea, as well as for the construction of a greenfield facility and a tech center in Japan. And actually, most of the capital expenditures for these two investment projects will be incurred in the second half of this year and in early 2011. In automotive catalysts, as you recall from a previous announcement, we recently completed our latest wave of investment in Suzhou in China, and the new production capacity and the new capabilities that we have installed there will support now the growth of our customers in the region. We have also recently announced the construction of an emission test center in Suzhou, which should be commissioned in 2012 and will help us strengthen our technological leadership in the region. Of course, the capital expenditures related to that tech center will only start towards the end of this year, so it's not yet visible in the cash flow statement. The battery recycling project is also ongoing, and we expect the new plant in Hoboken to be commissioned sometime shortly after mid-year 2011. I would say that the new facility will come on stream very timely as we continue to develop the spent battery supply streams, both from portable devices as well as the larger automotive systems. Let's now move to the business review, and starting with advanced materials. In advanced materials, revenue grew some 13% from the first half of 2009, reflecting increased sales volumes in all end markets of cobalt and specialty materials, be it for ceramics and chemicals applications, rechargeable batteries, or tooling applications. In rechargeable battery materials, the proportion of new NMC compounds in the mix continues to increase, and the emergence of the electrified vehicle-related demand will most likely reinforce the trend. In electro-optic materials, sales were stable. You may recall that sales in that business unit were really not affected by the downturn in the first place last year, so we should not expect a revenue pattern similar to other businesses in advanced materials this year either. The mix, however, was somewhat different than last year. We had higher sales of germanium substrates as a result of higher demand for LED applications, while sales of infrared optics were somewhat down. In thin film materials, the revenues recovered from the low levels of last year, and we continue to make good progress with the market introduction of rotary targets, both for photovoltaic applications and special glass. As you could see from the graphs on page 15, the recurring EBIT in the segment grew much faster than revenue. That is due partly to the operating leverage resulting from the cost reductions and better supply conditions for cobalt refining activities. To the largest extent, though, the growth in the faster growth in EBIT is due to the spectacular turnaround in the contribution of Element 6 Abrasives, whose revenues are not being consolidated. The turnaround there is a result of a recovery in demand for all applications, be it in drilling, mining, constructions, tools, as well as positive mixed development and the effect of cost reduction measures which were implemented in the course of 2009. Looking ahead for the second half, we expect the recovery trend in rechargeable battery materials to persist, although some short-term volatility may persist too. And all in all, this should bring our results in the second half a bit above the results of the second half of last year. In precious metals products and catalysts, revenues were up 23%, and similar to advanced materials, the EBIT recovery was actually sharper than the revenue growth, and that is essentially the effect of the cost reduction measures that were implemented in the course of last year as well. Car production was up 38% in the first half and reached 35 million units, and our sales volumes and revenues grew actually in line with the market globally. The recovery was obviously most spectacular in those regions that were most affected by the downturn early last year, that is to say in the US, in Japan, and to a lesser extent in Europe, while the business continued to grow nicely in China. The recovery in automotive production was also the main factor behind the increased demand for precious metals compounds for our precious metals chemistry business unit. There was also a strong recovery in technical materials. That's one of the units that next to automotive catalyst was heavily affected by the downturn early in the process in mid-2008 and in 2009. We saw improving demand in all application fields, switch gears, HVAC applications, automotive-related devices, and that was combined with the effect of significant cost reductions. In jewelry and electroplating, sales and earnings grew substantially from last year's levels, driven by high levels of recycling activity. That is typically the case as when the gold price is high, which was the case in the first part of this year, and at the same time, a sharp recovery in demand for electroplating applications across the board. In the segment, we expect demand in the second half of the year to be somewhat lower than in the first half of 2010, as some of the car scrapping incentive schemes continue to be phased out, and also considering the typical seasonal effects that we observe in the segment. However, there are indications that the improvement patterns that we observe since mid-2009 are fundamentally unchanged and should continue to prevail, and I would expect our second half results to be actually higher than those we achieved in the same period in 2009. In precious metal services, EBIT and profitability have returned to the high, or maybe I should say very high levels of 2007 and 2008, and I would say the improvement from last year is the result of a combination of factors. Production has increased at many non-ferrous smelters, and that translates as anticipated in increased availability of complex precious metals containing residue streams. Also, the availability of spent automotive catalyst has started to improve, although it has not recovered to the levels that we had seen pre-downturn yet. And the recycling of other end-of-life materials has continued to grow nicely. That is driven to a certain extent by tightening legislation, especially in Europe, which is leading in that respect. Finally, we did benefit from higher metal prices, both for precious metals and a certain number of secondary metals which we recover, such as indium or tellurium. The contribution from metals management has increased too. It was supported by higher metal prices, by higher precious metals prices, and somewhat higher volatility that typically creates better trading opportunities for the unit, while the demand for investor gold bars remained extremely strong and was actually exacerbated by the government credit crisis that emerged in the second quarter of this year. Based on the supply that is currently available for processing in the coming months, I'm talking about the recycling activity, and the level at which we have secured precious metals prices through year-end, we expect a steady performance in the segment for the second part of the year. Unlike other segments, revenues in zinc specialties were flat year-on-year, and EBIT, recurring EBIT, decreased somewhat. This reflects, on one hand, the impact of lower received zinc prices and the impact that that has on the recycling margins in zinc chemicals, while, on the other hand, the product sales grew in line and recovered in line with the market. In building products, sales and EBIT were down. The number of new building projects was at the lowest in 2009, and you may recall that we discussed about those trends and the fact that ore products come fairly late in the construction process, so there is a time lag effect in the business. So as anticipated, the low level of new building activity starting in 2009 now means lower deliveries for ore products. Also, the harsh winter conditions in Europe, and Europe constitutes our largest single market, have not been very supportive to the business. Second half results should reflect the typical seasonal pattern in the business, and the good news, though, is that we see the number of building projects steadily increasing now, and this bodes well for the business of next year. At this stage, I would like to hand over to Martin, who will provide additional comments regarding our financials.
Let's go straight away to slide 28 with the debt evolution. And as you see, there has been really very robust cash flow generation, and I can say that that has been across all business groups in the company. The working capital changes you see there are mainly related to the higher business levels and to the higher metal prices, and in fact show that we have our working capital, even in those circumstances, very well under control. The CapEx, as Mark said, relatively low for the first half, but we should see the second half to be higher because the number of projects are only starting in the second half. Very low taxes paid. You know, the timing of the taxes is not in line with the recognition of tax debt. Interest paid in line with the relatively low level of debt and the low level of interest rates. And then the dividend being obviously a big cash outflow in a company. But that brings our debt at the end of the half year at a level of 241 million, which is a gearing ratio of debt on debt versus equity of 13.7%. So extremely healthy levels and net debt on EBITDA of 0.6. The debt structure, you all know, it's very diversified. Right now we are drawing very little on our revolving credit facility, so the upward opportunity, if there would be a necessity, is clearly still there. Non-recurring items, non-recurring items mainly related to the impairment on metal inventories and then the zinc inventories, which we brought in at the time of the near star split up when the zinc prices were relatively high, and also an impairment on the goodwill of Hycor. Other elements have to do with impairments and IAS 39 elements that are non-cash in nature. When we look at EPS, we see that EPS is back and even in the first half slightly above pre-downturn levels, and driven, as I said, by as well EBIT results, but also a tax rate that we are managing to maintain at relatively low levels, around the 22%, and the relatively low interest charges. As a, on the back, in fact, of these this very strong EPS, we decided to proceed and ask the board for approval to proceed with an interim dividend. An interim dividend which will be 325 euro cents a share.
Will 32.5 euro.
Oh yeah, 32.5 euro cents per share, payable in October. We are maintaining our dividend policy of growing our stable dividend. And I hand over to Mark to conclude.
In concluding, let me repeat the key takeaways from the first half performance. First of all, revenues and earnings have improved substantially. Of course, I'm not going to emphasize the comparison to last year given the low comparison base. What I find most meaningful, though, is that the recovery has gathered steam recently, and it is becoming more likely now that revenues would return to a pre-crisis level 1 year ahead of original expectations, while profitability is there already. Our strategy is clearly focused on promising markets, and that's the next key message, on promising market developments in energy materials, catalysis, and recycling, and we have aligned the organization to these strategic priorities. And of course, our strong financial situation, as Marcin described it, is naturally continuing to support the execution of the strategy. Based on the strong performance in the first half and the forecast demand in the second half, we are now raising the full-year EBIT guidance by some 20% at the bottom end of the range and some 15% at the top end of the range, and now expect full-year recurring EBIT to be somewhere between 315 and 335 million euro. And the board's decision to pay an interim dividend underscores the quality of the performance and the quality, of course, of the financial situation, as well as our confidence in the future. Ending on this positive note, I would like now to open the floor to questions. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now start the Q&A session. If you wish to ask a question, please press the code 01 on your telephone keypad and you will enter a queue. When your name is announced, you can ask your question. So once again, please press the code 01 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. And the first question is from Wim Hoster from KBC Securities. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning. Wim Hoster, KBC Securities. I have two questions. First, on the precious metal services division, you mentioning in the press release that there are lock-ins, metal price lock-ins also for 2011 and to a lesser extent for 2012. My question is really on 2011. Could you maybe indicate the kind of portion of metal price exposure that is locked in and to what extent that could support profitability in 2011 versus your, let's say, your old guidance of 60-70 million low metal price environment EBIT contribution or recurring EBIT contribution? That's first question. Second one is on the catalyst business, and could you maybe be a little bit more precise than what is mentioned in the press release on the heavy-duty diesel segment and to what extent you have won new contracts or you have positioned yourself for new business and what that could represent both in the second half and 2011. Thank you.
Let me start with the easy and short answer, the easy question on the HDD. No, we're not going to be more specific at this stage in the process. I think the comments that we made in the press release are sufficient at this stage. As far as PMS is concerned, it's difficult to give you an overall percentage because, again, as we described in the past, we do we fix metal prices for certain metals on a contract by contract basis. Every contract is different. Some prices cannot be fixed or cannot be hedged. So it's difficult to give you in a clear indication. What I would expect is that based on the hedged portion for next year, and if the for the hedged portion, if the current prices continue to prevail, we would probably be in the same region as what we see this year. So there is no significant difference compared to the I would say the price basket for the 17 metals that we would have this year. Regarding the comparison to the 60 to 70 million earlier guidance, I think you should. That's going to be difficult because the difference between the result today and the earlier guidance of 60 to 70 million in a normalized environment has to do with many factors, and it's not a price differential alone. Metal prices do have a role there, but I think the difference is mainly driven by the type of supply that we managed to attract, the supply mix, and the market conditions and the refining margins, I would say, independent of the metal prices. So in the current environment, I would see actually, and it's difficult again to describe what the normalized market, what normalized market conditions may be, but in the current environment, I think we should not refer to the 60 to 70 million earlier guidance because it's unlikely that we would get back to this kind of level of earnings.
Any further questions, Mr. Hosler?
No, thank you very much.
Okay, the next question is from Sophie Jodier, calling from Citi. Your line is open.
Yes, morning. Couple of questions, please. First, on the advanced materials business, I just wanted to understand how much you felt that sort of restocking did play a part in the very strong results in the first half. It sounded from your commentary on the second half that you expect perhaps quite a fall back. I think you mentioned just for the second half EBIT to be just a little bit above last year's, which was down at sort of 20-odd million. So I wondered whether you could explain what you see in that division. And second, sorry, you probably just said it, but perhaps I missed it. Just on the heavy-duty diesel side, the sort of phasing of contracts you expect, you know, as they come through, and perhaps the timing of when that might become material to you. Thanks.
Let's start with the question regarding advanced materials. Actually, what we observed in the first part of this year is actually some, I would say, erratic movements in demand at some of our customers with, I would say, wild or sharp fluctuations from 1 month to the other. And we suspect that there have been continued inventory corrections throughout the period in some end markets. All in all, our analysis is that the restocking effect has had little overall impact because actually restocking in many of these end markets started in the last quarter of 2009. And so it's I would say, not the main feature of what we see in the first half of 2010. The main feature is the underlying, the improvement or recovery in underlying demand. And you can also see that If you look at some of the end markets, such as mobile phones, notebook, PCs, etc., you see that the end market demand, the consumer demand, has really recovered. And so that is the main feature rather than the restocking. The comments regarding the outlook for the second half of the year really has to do with the fact that in the businesses other than rechargeable battery materials, we expect the typical seasonality pattern to prevail in the second part of this year. It's not likely to be the case in the rechargeable battery materials because of some of the new business that is coming on stream now. And that improvement trend is going to be somewhat offset by the seasonality in the other business lines of advanced materials. And that's why, all in all, we expect the results to be somewhat lower than what they were in the first half of the year, but still ahead of what we saw in the second half of last year, confirming the underlying improvement in demand. On HDD, sorry, can you repeat your question, Sophie?
Yes, sorry. Apologies if you answered it in the previous question, but I just wanted to understand the phasing of the contracts. It seemed in the statement you were talking about some major contracts sort of coming up, just the timing of those and when they might, sort of HDD might become a bit more material to your business.
Yeah, similar to what was mentioned in previous communications, we expect that to become more material in 2013-2014 timeframe, with some significant business starting next year. And you may recall from previous discussions that we said that today we still have more development costs than revenues in the business, and that would turn around somewhere in 2012 with more significant contribution coming in 2013-2014.
Thank you, that's great, thanks.
Any further questions, Ms. Georgie?
No, that's all, thank you very much.
Okay, we turn to Andrew Stott from Merrill Lynch. Your line is open, sir.
Oh, good morning. Mark, can I just ask you about what you're seeing in the AutoCATs business? So you're obviously referring to some slowdown in the second half. Is that a comment on your own beliefs for the effects of what you mentioned, seasonality, but also also the scrappage scheme issue, or is it a reference to already seeing some lower production runs on your own business? So that's the first question. The second question for Martin: can you just remind me of your CapEx guidance for the full year? Because the CapEx the first half looked lower than I had in the model, and also the tax rate at 22%. Will that stay there? Thank you for taking the questions.
Okay, let me start with the catalyst demand, and what you saw in the first part of this year is that our business has really developed in line with the market, and I would expect that to continue in the second part of the year. I have no reason to believe that it would be any different, actually, going forward. And the comment about the car scrapping schemes and the seasonal effects has to do more with the market than Umicore moving not in line with the market, possibly.
Your question on CapEx spending, I would expect CapEx spending to end up around 200 million. It will depend on a number of the projects we are starting in the second half, so the timing, could influence that number.
Sure.
A little bit up or a little bit down, but I mean 200 million is a good number to work with, and you can keep the tax rate pretty much at similar levels for the time being. We will see that over time, let's say over the next 5 years, our tax rate is going to slowly creep up because some tax holidays are going away and tax loss carry forwards being. For the time being, we are at that level for a little while to go.
Okay, great, thanks.
Okay, and we move on to the next question from Frank Lassens from Rabo. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning, Frank Laassen, Rabobank. Two questions. You talked about the dollar. Can you a bit more quantify what the effect of the dollar has been on your first half rebit? And a second question, in your press release, you talk about that in your recycling division you were successful in attracting certain new streams of complex materials. Can you give us a little bit more feel what that is and if that is sustainable?
Okay, so actually the sensitivity to the dollar rate is known and communicated. On a full year basis, it's approximately a 1 cent change in the exchange rate means about 1 million in EBIT.
Okay.
On a full year basis, approximately, mm-hmm. and in the absence of hedges. Now, the dollar rate has really helped us compared to the second half of last year more than the first half of last year, because it was really equivalent to the first half of last year. The dollar started to really decline in mid 2009 and actually recovered in the first part of this year. So the comparable periods are not so dissimilar in terms of dollar exchange rates.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the next question was about the complex. We tend to work at full capacity in our recycling plant for precious metals all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And what really changes in function of market conditions is the mix of materials. And I would say today we see a very favorable environment where actually we see a lot of the complex residue streams from other smelters, whether they are PGM smelters and miners or other non-ferrous smelters,
mm-hmm.
To be becoming available and be on the market and available to us. While last year in the downturn, many of those producers had to reduce their activities and to idle some capacity, which means that we had to process some less complex materials for which there is a little bit more competition out there in the recycling arena.
Okay, all right. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, can I remind you that you can ask a question by pressing the code 01 on your telephone keypad. And we move on to the next question from Mark van der Geest from ABN AMRO. Your line is open.
Good morning. I have three questions. First, I'm a bit confused on your outlook for the second half results in advanced materials. In your presentation, you mentioned that the second half of 2010 should be somewhat above the second half in 2009. And when you answered the question from Julien from Citi, then you mentioned the H2 would be somewhat below the first half. So what are the two? Is it, or is it is your outlook just the average of these two? That's the first question. Then the second, could you maybe quantify the cost benefit that you saw in especially the advanced materials and in your precious metal products and catalyst business? That's the second question. And thirdly, could you maybe comment on the length of your order book in the four divisions? What do these order books tell you about the third quarter or on the second half? Thank you very much.
On the results, just a second, please.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm not sure about the how I introduced confusion. Maybe it's about the how we read slightly and somewhat. But basically, as I mentioned, the results in the second half of the year in advanced materials should be above the results of last year, confirming, I would say, the underlying improvements that I described earlier, but will not reach the level seen in the first half of this year, given the typical seasonality that we have in the business. I'm not going to give you a more detailed guidance to tell you exactly where in between those two numbers you should put the forecast. The only quantified forecast that we give is for the full for the group in its totality. Then the cost savings, I'm afraid I will have to give you the same answers as in the previous conference calls since we started the discussion about the restructuring measures? No, there is no detail. We're not disclosing details about the cost benefits. We continue to focus our comments on the EBIT, the revenue development, and the overall profitability without breaking down the components thereof. And then the length of the order book varies significantly from one segment or one business line or product line to the other. I would say that today we have fairly good visibility, I would say on average for the next quarter, that of course Q4, like in many industries, remains I would say a bit more uncertain, and there are more question marks about Q4. In the recycling activities, typically we have a fairly strong level of visibility because the materials arrive well in advance of being recycled, and there we can, our forecasting is pretty reliable.
And is that 6 months, or is that already into 2011? Can you, what is the kind of visibility that you have in your recycling business, approximately?
In recycling, well, if you remember the discussion that we had on that subject last year when we started saying that there was an improvement coming in the supply mix, we mentioned that the time lag was about 6 months for the improvement in the market to translate into improved results, and that's approximately the kind of visibility that we have. Of course, we have longer term contracts well beyond the 6 months, but the arrivals under the umbrella of those contracts, the actual levels of arrivals are not yet known.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next question is from Adam Collins from Liberum Capital. Your line is open.
Yeah, hello, good morning. I had three questions on the advanced materials side. I mean, firstly, it's apparent that a big delta in the division has been the turnaround at Element 6, as you alluded to. And obviously that's got a lot to do with the cyclical recovery of its end markets and the significant headcount reduction that occurred last year. But I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about what's going on there, since it's been such a significant delta on the face of it during the period. And the second question is on the germanium substrate side. You mentioned that you're still in the qualification stage for the US plant. Can you talk a little bit more about when the plant will move to serious production and when we might expect it to turn from loss into profit? And then finally, you also mentioned on the battery material side that NMC continues to take mix from lithium cobaltite. Could you just confirm that isn't margin diluted for you, that you make the same returns out of NMC as you do from higher cobalt grade materials like lithium cobaltite?
Okay, regarding Element 6, indeed the improvement in contribution was quite significant, and one of the most significant factors in the improvement in the whole sector. What we saw there is a combination of factors. As you alluded to, there was a significant effort at reducing costs in the course of last year, mostly a headcount reduction, and also a somewhat reconfiguration of the production environment. And those benefits from the cost reductions are now fully affecting the results. Secondly, the sales have recovered to a much higher level, driven by higher demand for drilling and mining applications, higher demand in construction, in tools, and in I would say machining as well, reflecting the overall trend that we see in the economy. And of course, with the cost reductions that were achieved in last year, the operational leverage has increased, so that the recovery in volumes is creating a very significant upturn in profitability. Also, we have at Element 6, we have managed the margins and the product mix in a way to improve the overall performance, and that has been a fairly successful effort. So I would say the combination of the three, recovery in demand, cost reductions and operational leverage effect, and better mix and margin effects that are leading to this spectacular improvement in results.
Okay.
Regarding the qualification of the germanium substrate, we expect the process to take, by and large, a full year, and it started, I would say, earlier this year, so we'll likely move into series production late this year or early next year, and I think it's a little bit too early to say when the plant is going to turn positive following the series production start.
Okay.
And then the margin mix on in the battery materials and the difference between NMCs and LCOs, that's quite difficult to describe because you have zillions of grades of materials of so you have many different grades of LCOs and many different grades of NMCs. That's just a generic name for a product family or a technology family. It is really difficult to compare, clearly we focus on, as usual, on the high end of the market, whether it's in the most demanding applications, whether it's through the LCO or the NMC products. So indeed, we continue to focus on the higher margin segments there.
Okay. Can I just follow up on ECA? What's the level of headcount manning like now relative to output levels? Is there a risk that you might have to increase headcount as the business recovers now?
Sorry, I didn't couldn't understand the first part of the question.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, you cut back, from what we can tell, by more than 30% headcount last year, and at the time that seemed to be quite severe for business that looked likely to see some sort of cyclical recovery this year. And the question is, to what extent will you have to increase labor now as the business recovers?
Sorry, again, the line is not so good, so I couldn't fully understand the question. Where did we increase headcount?
No. You cut headcount significantly, and the business is now recovering. So is there a risk that you will have to increase headcount now to meet higher demand levels?
Overall, in all businesses?
In ECA, in ESA, in Element 6.
It's like in all other businesses. I would say the majority of the cost reductions are permanent, and some of them are not because they are related simply to the level of production activity. So I would say there is already an increase in headcount in Element 6. There is an increase in headcount in some other businesses to cope with increased production levels. But I would say the vast majority of the cost savings were achieved last year are permanent.
Right. Thank you very much.
And the next question is from Markus Meyer from UniCredit. Your line is open.
Yeah, good morning. As most of the questions on the segment have been asked, two more general questions. First of all, could you give us a flavor on the sentiment of the end customers, especially towards growth assumptions for the emerging markets? And second one is, can you give us detail maybe if you have on the inventory levels of your end customers? Are they back to normal levels or still below? That's all from my side.
Just one second, please. It's not very straightforward. I would say we work with order books and our customers' forecasts, of course, and it's difficult to tell exactly what their growth assumptions are, and there isn't a single answer that would cover adequately all businesses because the situation is different from one segment and industry sector from to the other. What I can only repeat is that in most segments,
What we see as an improvement trend is really reflecting an improvement in underlying demand, and so it's not a probably not a short-lived effect. There will continue to be volatility. We're not back to the activity levels that we had pre-downturn levels, but overall the underlying trends are positive. I cannot really translate that into what the growth assumptions are that our customers are making. In most cases, what we observe in terms of inventory levels is that they are, I would say, low to normal, normalized levels, and inventories have not been built up back to the levels, to the high levels that we saw before the crash in mid-2008, actually. So it is, I would say, also a more satisfactory situation that we see in terms of inventories in the supply chain, and probably it's going to lead to a bit lower risk level of risk in terms of demand.
Okay, perfect. Thanks.
And the next question is from Peter Zwinkels from RBS. Your line is open.
Yeah, good morning. It's Peter. Two questions on PMS. First, you state that even for 2011 you're locking in now sales contracts, and then especially mentioned gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. Does it mean that there's still no liquid mark for rhodium? That's one. Two, does it also mean that you expect prices to go down then for next year? And what is your visibility on the current pricing environment? And then on the capital employed in PMS, it's still going down compared to last year end 2009. What are the drivers behind that reduction, given that the raw material prices only went up? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Let me start with the last one, because actually it's the price component in the capital employed of PMS is only a very small component. What actually is driving the capital employed to such low levels is the business model. It's a business model whereby, we have typically high payables levels, and in many cases, payables are higher than receivables. And so I think that's part of the business model, and it's, I would say, our unique flow sheet and yields and restitution times that enable us to work along those lines. So it's part of our competitive edge. It's nothing to do with or little to do with inventory levels or with precious metals prices impact. So there are fluctuations indeed depending on cutoff effects in terms of payables and receivables, but typically it is going to be a business, it's going to continue to be a business of high payables, and that is really the main explanation. Do we expect metal prices to go down, and is that the reason for the hedges? Not necessarily. I think that in many cases, fixing the prices in a contract, in complex contracts with many metal components in a contract, is a matter of reaching a mutual agreement with the supplier, and so once both parties are happy with the price and are happy to fix it for an extended period of time, this is what we would do. It doesn't necessarily reflect. I would say it reflects more the fact that we're satisfied with the margin that we can fix on a contract than our price expectation for the metal price in isolation. And your first question, is there still no liquidity for rhodium, no liquid market for rhodium? The answer is yes. There is no liquid market for rhodium, and the market reacts, is very tight and reacts to any very tiny little sale or purchase of the metal.
Okay, thank you. And then a follow-up maybe on, let's say that the end of June, so let's say actually the price correction of platinum then in the second quarter, have you seen any reluctance of your clients to offer their scrap to you for recycling?
No, not really. I think it's nothing comparable. There may be certain cases, and I cannot comment on really each individual customer situation. But this being said, there is nothing really comparable to what we observed a year ago when, for instance, spent automotive catalysts were simply not were hoarded and not arriving to the market. So nothing of that sort.
Okay, thank you.
And the next question is from Martin Evans from JP Morgan. Your line is open. We switch to Rim Banani from Exane. Exane, your line is open.
Morning, Rim Banani from Exane. I think I have three questions. The first one, I think there was softer overall sales in Q2 versus Q1 for the group. Could you comment where this came from and if there were businesses where you saw whether strong uplift or downturn in sales or mix in Q2 versus Q1? Second question, I don't think this has been asked on the underlying auto scenario. I think last time you spoke at the Q1 call, you were mentioning a scenario below 65 to 66 million units. Has that changed actually, and is this reflected in your upper end guidance or not? And just coming back, I think, to a question that was asked previously, but I don't think I've heard you answering on the softening of your PMPC sales through the first month of Q3 or not. Third and last question in PMS, wanted to know what was the metal trading contribution like in PMS in H1, above normal, like 20% of EBIT contribution, more or less. And just coming back to your comment on spent catalyst, don't know if you've mentioned that, but do you consider we're back to normality or still below in terms of traded volumes? Thank you.
Okay, so that's many questions, actually. I thought you said that you had two questions.
Three questions on one general auto and PMS question. Yeah, you're right.
And several sub-questions.
Several sub-questions.
So I hope I could write them down all. Let's start with Q2 versus Q1. I think there is no fundamental movement between Q2 and Q1, except the trend that I mentioned earlier, that we saw the recovery in many of our businesses accelerate and gather some steam in recent months, being in Q2. But it's not really, doesn't create a huge or wild fluctuations in terms of revenues, of earnings between the two quarters. So you should not try to derive too much information from quarterly fluctuations. They are not always the most significant or the most relevant, the most meaningful, I should say, in our businesses. And in certain areas, we had fairly significant monthly fluctuations up or down. So I think we should look at the longer-term trend and underlying trends, which continue to be very supportive. Now let me come back to the other question regarding the underlying car production scenario. And indeed, last time I was referring to a car build scenario of just under 65 million vehicles. It looks like we may be over that figure for the full year. 35 million cars were produced in the first part of the year, and I read projections or forecasts from industry specialists that there could be 30, 32, 33 million cars built in the second part of the year, so total could be 67, 68 million. Carlos Ghosn talks about 70 million cars being built. So that's, I would say, difficult for me to make out what is going to be the car build rate. And actually, the way we work in terms of planning and forecasting is not starting from the top-down car build rate globally, but it's a bottom-up process that really looks at each single platform that we have, and we work with the most, if not all, OEMs worldwide, and as you know, there are three large players and the distant number four in the sector. And not all of the three players are positioned on each and every platform. We have different platforms at practically each car manufacturer. And working bottom-up means that we add up the platforms that we have or the forecast that we have for each platform. But I cannot necessarily tell you whether that corresponds to a 65 million scenario or 64 or 68 million scenario. I can tell you, I know what it means in terms of sales forecast for us. So, I mean, whether it's 65 or 68 will not change fundamentally our sales and earnings forecast for the year, because again, it's been a bottom-up process, adding up all the platforms that that we have. The trading contribution from in precious metals services, what we mentioned is that in the good years, it is up to 20% of the total segment. In the lower years, it's 10% of a lower number. I think we're in between, but we're definitely not close to the top end of the range, and are not going to be close to the top end of the range, because even if metal prices are at decent levels, volatility has been relatively low, especially for rhodium this year, which is one of the key markets where we are a market maker, that means that we're not going to be close to the top end of that range, but the contribution is more than what we typically see at the low end of the range. And these are the questions that I managed to write down. Did I overlook anything significant?
There was two small questions. Well, one that the question was asked before, but I couldn't hear you answering. It's on the first. I mean, have you seen any softening on because of the because of the scrapping schemes are actually leaving and the weaker seasonality in H2 generally into the AutoCAD business? That's the first question. And the second question is just coming back to your comments on spent AutoCAD. If you consider that we have come we've come back to normal deliveries, or if we're still below. Thank you very much.
Okay, in spent AutoCAD, no, we're not back to, I would say, pre-downturn supply levels or supply availability levels. And so it is the improvement is there compared to last year, but we're still there's still a way to go before we see the levels that we had prior to the downturn. So it's not yet normalized market conditions as far as we consider it. Have we seen a softening in catalyst or in the car demand? Sorry, in catalyst demand for cars so far? It's a bit difficult to isolate the effect of car scrapping schemes in a way, because look at the U.S., which was the first market where the scrapping schemes were phased out about a year ago, because they were used up by the summer of 2009, and the market has continued to hold up extremely well. So again, it is an example to or an illustration that it's really difficult to isolate the effect of car scrapping schemes. And in Europe, clearly, there has been an effect. In Germany in particular, you have seen the demand for new cars dropping when the car scrapping schemes were phased out. And in other regions, you see some, in other markets in Europe, you see indeed a certain volatility and quick response to changes in government incentives. However, again, there are other factors playing, other the catalyst demand, like for instance some changes in the mix, with a little bit more diesel again coming into the equation, which is also supporting some of our sales. So I would say yes, in theory, the phasing out of the scrapping schemes should have an impact on the market. Have we observed so far a softening? Not quite yet really, because there are other factors playing, and it's difficult to isolate them.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we now move to Martin Evans from JP Morgan.
Yes, thanks. Just one very quick question. Just on that point about diesel engine growth in Europe and the impact in terms of demand for catalysts, you do refer in the statement to the faster growth of the diesel portion of the market. Is that due to sort of some new positive trends from the consumer, or is it simply due to the fact of the scrappage schemes falling away, which favoured, obviously, gasoline vehicles, and therefore, by definition, catalyst vehicles are doing better now? Thanks.
Martin, I would say the latter, and you may recall that last year we mentioned that actually the scrapping schemes were really distorting the sales mix in the market by actually promoting or favoring the small gasoline engines to the detriment of diesel. So diesel has crept back up again in the supply mix, in the sales mix, but is not yet back to the levels of sales that we saw prior to the downturn. So I think it's somewhat more of a correction of the distortion that was introduced by the scrapping schemes, more than a change, any fundamental change in the consumer behavior. One of the factors longer term that need to be kept in mind when considering the ratio of diesel to gasoline will be the tightening CO2 legislation. Of course, there is also upcoming NOx, a tightening of NOx legislation, which is not supporting diesel, but on the other side, diesel plays an important role in lowering the average CO2 emissions, fleet average CO2 emissions. So that's going to be continue to change in function of legislation, but I think diesel has an important role to play in the equation if we're serious about maintaining low CO2 or reducing CO2 emissions.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we have two follow-up questions. One is from Adam Collins from Liberum Capital. Your line is open.
Yes, hello again. Very quick question. In the period you announced that there will be a new organisational structure at the year end, and you've also announced that you will have a new Chief Technology Officer. I wondered if you could say whether we should see that as significant, and if so, why? What difference will that make to the business looking forward?
Well, you know that for a number of years we have refocused our business to segments that are related to energy materials, to the recycling services, and to catalysis, while continuing, of course, to run our other businesses for performance. And so far, we commented on how the investments and the research efforts were aligned and were supporting that strategy. Today we have, I would say, made the last step in executing the strategy, which is also aligning the organization to fully support the execution of that strategy. So it's a matter of having the most efficient internal organization to pursue our projects in energy materials, in recycling, and in catalysis, and making sure that the deployment of resources is optimal. Is that going to have an effect, and is the appointment of a full-time CTO going to have an effect? Yes, the idea is that with the technology content and the critical importance of technology development as part of the strategic deployment of Umicore in the segments I have mentioned, we need to have to dedicate more attention to technologies, and we need to work full force in that direction. And that's why we need to have a full-time chief technology officer, while in the past we had a technology officer that who was sharing his time between the technology matters and running some businesses. And this is something that we are doing away with, and in trying to become even more efficient.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. That's helpful. Thanks.
And the next follow-up question is from Mark van der Geest from ABN AMRO. Your line is open.
Yes, two small follow-up questions, please. And maybe first on diamond tools.
You mentioned that the recovery became evident towards the end of the period. In that context, could you elaborate on what you see in the construction market? And the second one, could you give some color on the ratio of NMC to LCO, please? Thank you very much.
Diamond tools and tools in general and have started to recover later than other businesses, and one of the factors behind that was that the level of inventories in the supply chain in that sector was extremely high, and was actually higher than in many other industries. And the excess inventories, it took a while for the excess inventories to be worked out of the system completely. So that's why the recovery only started to become evident in the second quarter of this year. And actually, the recovery that we see confirms also the signs or the indications that we have in terms of new construction projects, whether they are infrastructure related or residential projects. So I think that is the recovery that we see in the tooling industry, whether it's for the cobalt powders or for Element 6 abrasives, bodes well for the construction activity next year.
Is there some regional trend that you can see in that business as well, the diamond tools? Is it purely Europe?
No, that is across region, and it's Asia, Europe, and North America.
And
Asia being, as far as we are concerned, mostly Japan, Korea, and more than other parts of Asia.
And all the three regions have shown the recovery, or is it only Asia?
I've just mentioned it's the three regions. It's Asia, Europe, and North America.
Okay, thank you. And second question? The NMC to LC.
Ah, yes, sorry. I missed that. No, we're not going to give the ratio, the exact ratio. We're not willing to disclose that. We think it's too sensitive from a competitive point of view.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sorry about that.
Okay, the last question is from Mark De Brouwer, calling from Peter Cam. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning. Quick questions. What is now the percentage of toll refining in PMS? Has there been any significant changes in recent periods? And second question, what were the reasons for the refined volumes in cobalt? Situation was not so good in Belgium in Q1. Is it just the occurrence of opportunities, and how do you see H2?
So there is no significant change in the ratio of tolling versus own refining in precious metal services, and actually it doesn't matter so much to us. We just respond to the customer's preferences, and that is not going to change fundamentally the margins or the profitability.
Yes, and no impact also on the net working capital?
Well, it could, but then we get paid for that. So it's not materially affecting or impacting the margins, nor the profitability, the returns on capital employed. So it's a flexibility that we offer the customer. They can choose, and that's not really a material has no material effect on our results.
Thank you.
Yeah, the refining activity has been a little bit the cobalt refining activity has been a little bit erratic in the past 18 months. Supply conditions and volumes have tended to change fairly rapidly in both directions, and activity was not so buoyant in the Belgian refinery in the first part of the year, in the first quarter, and then improved. This being said, we continue to have a fairly high level of refining activity and contribution from our Chinese operations.
Thank you.
And there are no further questions, Mr. Greenberg. Do you have any closing comments?
No. Indeed, at this stage, I think we need to close the Q&A session. Obviously, we'll have opportunities to meet and discuss in the coming days and weeks and elaborate on these subjects once you have had a chance to analyze the figures in more depth. And, of course, our investor relations team, as usual, is available for your most immediate questions, the most immediate questions that that you may have. So at this stage, I would like to thank you for attending the conference call, and I look forward to meeting with many of you in the coming days and continuing the discussion. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mr. Grünberg. Thank you, Ms. Verleiten. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. I thank you all for attending.